try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Protonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharpened nails.
Don't it.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, or looking back at a certain witch.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. Is a science thing, is a science place, is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It's time once again for the one, the only... Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. Episode 461. That's right, of this lovely long-running show. Very excited. Shortly, a few minutes, to be talking to Kira Rossler. She's coming back on for the first time since I checked the scrolls, the sacred scrolls. August 2021, which seems like weeks ago, but was not, in fact, weeks ago. It was nearly 4.5 years ago. So that's exciting. Equally exciting, she has a brand new record, and I'm very excited to talk to her about that, as well as so many other things. A lovely person, lovely musician, lovely artist, just downright lovely, really. But before any of that, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer. It's been touring and recording for the last 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 461. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding, at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will gladly achieve that goal. And if you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. It's just a darn nice thing to do. Okay, so very close to tour time for Conan Neutron, the Secret Friends, East Coast. We're doing Youngstown, Ohio. We're doing Baltimore. We're doing New York. We're doing Western Massachusetts. We're doing Boston. So come out to those shows if you are able to. Come say hi for sure. Some West Coast stuff coming up in August as well. NeutronFriends.bandcamp.com for all that. But let's get ready to talk to Kira, because she has her second solo record. And I remember now that when I had her on last time, I didn't even know about the first. I was like, I was that ahead of the vanguard. So let's bring her on right now. Kira Rosso, welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
Number two.
Going on tour, man.
I know, right? It's still exciting and scary.
Okay. Get out here to the West Coast. We need you out here.
We played with Red Cross at Lodge Room in April.
I hear that's a great place. Yeah, I haven't been yet.
It's like a block from, it used to be Mr. T's Bowl.
Right.
But it was Highland Park Bowl. It's like a block from there. And I was like, I never knew this building was even here. It's a gorgeous venue, though. It's super
cool. That's what everybody's saying. Anyway, I got to get there.
Yeah. So, but we'll be back in September. We'll be back in September.
Good.
Second solo record.
Second solo record. Do you believe it? Somebody talked me into doing another one.
Was it Paul?
No, he did. That was the first one. And he would have never tried again. But no, this was someone else. And I really, wasn't sure I wanted to do it because it takes a lot of work, but also, you know, the fun part about music isn't necessarily the trying to get people to like your record, you know, it's the making the music. So, you know, that's not my strong suit, is telling people to check out my new solo record, but it's coming out on July 10th on Org Music, which is really cool. Super because tight. Org Music is doing some good stuff. They're putting out Descendants, old records and Bad Brains, and they're in it. They're deeply in it.
Yeah, and lots of cool stuff happening there. And it's interesting too, because in this world that we live in, like, everything kind of exists in present tense. Everything kind of exists at the same time. So you have people that are, you know, discovering Black Flag and discovering Dose and discovering your solo record all, like, out of order and at different times and in different weird pastiches and places.
And these days, why not, right?
Sure.
Things are just that crazy.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, that's the least of our concerns right now, right?
Right, exactly. Right.
No, and I like that you've been pushing creative boundaries with this kind of thing, because it's one of those things where, for a long time, and one of the reasons I originally asked to have you on the show years back was like, what's Kira up to? I have no idea what she's doing.
Like, what the hell is she doing with her life?
I bet she's doing something cool.
God, all this time, right?
And it's like, oh yeah, busy winning Emmys and Oscars and like...
I've been a band for 30 years, you know? We did some stuff. We put out some records. It takes about like 10 years to get a Dose record to happen, because we're both so busy, but...
Mike Watson, like 30 bands, so it's like...
Yeah, right. Try getting him to sit down with you.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's... But it's so interesting, because whenever you do have something, it's always worthwhile. It's always something that there's some weight there. There's a heft to it. There's artistic intent. And I feel like it's interesting that it's only been in recent years that it's been like under your own banner.
Yeah, you know, I have been doing this. In other words, I have been making my own songs and my own music in this little, you know, universe that is my room for forever, you know. And that was sort of Paul's impetus to tell me to put the record out. It's like, there's stuff. I work on stuff with him. I work on stuff with drummers. I had a guitar player friend for years and years that we worked on all sorts of stuff. So there was all this material, and there was all this sense of creativity. But the part about, like, well, do you guys need to hear it? That's the part that, you know, stops me up.
Sure. So is it something where, do you think it changes the art somewhat when you start thinking about who's going to be perceiving, or like, when does it reach the metric of, oh, this needs to be heard?
No, it doesn't change it. Like, Paul says my songwriting has just gotten better and better. I think that the new record does have some, you know, new boundaries that it's crossed from the last one. So I think there's a forward motion, but I think that the real thing is, what's the fun part about music? You know, what's really fun? Is it playing live, which could be really fun? Is it touring? Is it writing songs? Is it collaborating with friends? Like, why do you do music? And for me, it's about processing my emotions in my room with my bass and my voice. So because of that, there isn't a pressing need to have someone else say, wow, this is really cool. I don't mind. It's actually quite nice for someone to say, this is really cool. But there isn't God, this is what I need. What I need is to have a bunch of people say how good it is.
Right. Like, it's not for like validation or approval or anything. It's like, it's the act of creation itself that's, you know.
Right. I mean, there comes a point where if you're not comfortable with yourself, you know, you're in trouble at my age. You know, there is a point where you just go like, everything's fine here. You know, I'm just making my music. And if you want to check it out, that's really cool. And look, this record, the thing, I had to have a theme, and this record, the theme became the loss of my friend Glenn Brown, who plays guitar on the record and who I've made music with for many, many years. And his loss made me write a song particularly to processing those feelings called Enigma, which is why the record's called Enigma. Mm-hmm. And it just started up this idea of that I could do this in his honor. It became something that I could conceive of as a worthwhile thing in and of itself, just to put this out, just to say, hey, he was quite a guy.
Right, right. And in the act of it being released in the world, it's a celebration, right? It's a celebration of, of a life, which is wonderful. And it's wonderful that music can do that, you know. And again, that goes back to what we were saying about just, you know, things existing in like constant present tense and people discovering things in their own time and what have you. I mean, people can find all kinds of ways to torture themselves, but it's beautiful if you let it be, you know, it really is.
What is torture after all?
But I think I agree. I think that as a solo artist, I think your songwriting has evolved, a change, which, you know, of course, normally that does happen, you know, unless you're Johnny Ramone and you refuse to practice the guitar so you don't, so your style doesn't change.
for some people, you know, rock and roll has a long established history that you can just ride that wave, you know, and my feeling has always been to break the wave.
Right. Yeah, and that's the case also, you know, with your work with Mike and Dose as well. It's always like, it's like there's just two basses, like what?
Yeah, it's like crazy. screw all y'all. We're gonna have a band, and it's as punk rock as anything you've ever heard because you've never heard anything like it. That used to be what punk rock was.
That's right.
Be counter to what's going on. If punk rock as fast and loud is the hippest thing around, then it's not necessarily what I want to do anyway.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember before I ever heard Dose, I was like, oh, you know, Kieran Watt have a band together. I was like, oh, that's great. And I was like, yeah, it's just basses. I'm like, what? Really? Like,
why?
Huh. And I was just sort of like, I bet that's kind of cool though. Like that's, I've never, you know, I never heard that before. And I was like, oh, it could sound like Guitar Center. I don't know. But like, you know, but then I was like, no, with the compositional approach of using those instruments, I thought it was so fascinating. And you're so right. Because when you think about the promise of punk rock and what, you know, punk rock was meant to be, it wasn't a haircut. It wasn't even a style of music. It was this just white hot intensity coming from the heart that just is stripped of all the
and
BS.
Resisting at that time, you know, as it started, resisting disco and hippies and this kind of stuff. Like it's resisting the obvious, you know. And Mike and I mean, my God, we're both like bass players and bass players alone. Like, of course, it's just two basses. Like, do you think amidst those bass wars, you want to add another personality?
Right, this is giving me no room.
There is no room. That's the first thing we realized. When I first started doing two bass music, it was for my nephews. I made these bedtime stories and I would read the story, and then I thought it was very soothing to have two basses sort of intertwined, and there was this idea of it being soothing. And now it's become so fundamental to how I express myself that I just go through these moments of, you know, get an idea and sort of plow through it using this exact thing, two basses and my voice. It's become a little bit more my voice than in Dose, where Mike was really into it being having a lot of instrumentals, and that was just how he saw the band. And somehow my voice has become part of how I have to tell the story. And so both of the solo records have me singing all the way through them.
Well, you bring up an important thing because it is, for lack of a better term, it's soothing music. It's not like interruptive. It's not jarring. Yeah,
right.
You know,
right.
And it's which you tend to get the word moody attached to things like.
But there's a darkness and an anger and rage and all those. You know, I mean, the content is where I get to explore the same emotions that all punk rockers, you know, feel to their core, which is, you know, I can't stand what's happening and I'm fighting against it with every fiber of my being.
And that's, you know, it's been interesting that we're living in a world where punk rock gets to grow up, you know, for lack of a better term, right? Because it's you know, we still feel the same way, we see, if anything, it's sometimes more intense because you feel powerless to change anything. But like, how do we express that? How does that come forward?
Well, each one of us has to decide, right? Am I gonna, you know, find a way to push back, you know, and what's that gonna look like? And anything goes as far as I'm concerned. If you feel good out there walking around with the sign, man, do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm for whatever it is that makes you feel like you're fighting back, you know, and I don't mean against the government per se, fighting back against the normalcy, mediocrity, all of those things that we get painted into in our daily work lives a lot of the time, where we're all expected to conform. Well, okay, let's not conform.
Precisely. And also a lot of times people will focus on aspects of what the internet has turned into to be more atomized and just, you know, circles of confirmation bias and what have you.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of power and ability there to touch people as well.
Wow.
And to have greater impact on people's individual lives.
Exposure. Well. Man, look at what Phoebe Bridgers is doing. It's crazy.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's using social media. She's basically put Ticketmaster out over on the other side and just said, I'm putting on a gig and come down to see me and get in line and first come, first serve. And I don't care about all this organizational stuff. I want to go play the little talents. You know, all of these things she's doing is making it is really cool in terms of the immediacy of what social media can provide. Is it can create a community, which is not necessarily local, but is a community and will show up when asked.
And it's a bunch of people that maybe they don't know at all from Fugazi or Pearl Jam,
right,
or any of
sure.
these like fights over the years. And
right.
And it's there if they want to. But yeah, it's a kind of collective action that the internet promised us before it turned into walled gardens and advertising.
Yeah, well, and it's still that. You know, it can be more than one thing. You know,
it's a hugely
powerful tool. How are you going to use it? Can you think of a way to use it? You're using it in your own way. Like we're all trying to find ways. I got on Instagram. I didn't want to get on Instagram, but I decided that, you know, I would do whatever I was asked to promote the Enigma. It matters. It's a celebration, like we said. So I want to get those songs out there. We put out two singles already and people are getting a chance to hear it a little bit. And I get a little bit of feedback and I can put little videos up there and rah, rah, my thing.
Yeah. And people love it. I mean, I remember when I first, I was like, oh, it's Kira. Awesome. You know,
I showed up.
Ah, there she is. It's great.
She never shows up. She never goes anywhere. Hey, Mikey.
But it's, you know, and that's something where I guess if you live your life right, yeah, people will be excited to see you, right? I mean, that's one of them. This guy again, you know.
Well, there is such a thing as overexposure, but that's when it's important that the underlying thing, whether it's music or art, whatever the art is, that there's something of substance. You use the word substance. Hopefully there's something of substance that can add in to the, you know, if it is kind of overexposed, does it have an underlying substance that makes me feel good? I mean, I can list, there's records I can listen to over and over again. You probably have records can listen to over and over again. Overexposure doesn't exist for those.
No, it's the familiarity does not breed contempt. It breeds love, you know?
Right. It's and it brings up this whole nostalgia thing, which I was so fighting against for a while. And then my brother explained the word nostalgia and where it actually comes from was soldiers wanting to be home. And this was really like a pain that they had. And that actually nostalgia, you know, feeding your nostalgia thing makes you feel like you're back home. And so it made me understand a little better why Pill should go back on the road or whatever. Like, why would people want to go see something come back after a long period of time? You know, I personally want to do new stuff, but if people want to hear the old stuff, you know, that's awesome.
Well, and then, and there's a comfort to that, right? And we live in a world where people have to find their comforts where they can, because there's a lot of discomforting news and actions and things every day. And, yeah. and it does kind of put things in perspective when you are, you know, if someone that could maybe get mad about, oh, why, you know, why are so-and-so doing that? And it's like, who cares? Where, you know, which country are we bombing today? You know, I mean, it's just like, it's all these horrors that we have to contend with. Is the thing used to be upset at when
thinking
I was 20.
It can't get any worse. You keep thinking it can't get any worse, but you know, that's the challenge of life is this constant bombardment of whether it's, you know, financial stress or work stress or outside stress. You know, you're constantly bombarded by stuff. So what do you do, like you said, to comfort yourself? Do you seek music that feeds your soul, however that looks like? You know, do a little work to find something that makes you feel better. And hopefully there is art in that. Hopefully young people are using art to feel better and not just, you know, drugs, which has been a lot of what people will reach for when they're in pain.
Right. And there is something, I've noticed it, especially as you mentioned with younger folks and younger bands, that just the immediacy, evaluation of things happening in person rather than being like online and doom scrolling and what have you. And yeah. It's like, oh, that's awesome, because it's easy to get caught in the trap of being like, oh, well, everyone's just a slave. You know, it's Soma, you know, from, you know, Brave New World and what have you. And it's like, kind of, but not really. And not for everybody, because there's always going to be people that seek out authentic experiences and seek out and are trying to push the world and make the world better.
Well, there must be some reason why there are these festivals and there are these, you know, and bunch of people do choose to get together. There are communities, or there's a community in that moment of a bunch of people who want to go see, you know, if you offer us enough bands, you know, that'll make me get up out of my chair, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Europe has festivals all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just threw a thing called Catterwall that happens in Minneapolis yearly. You know,
yeah, there's some stuff happening. You know, Mike and I played these jazz festivals in Canada, and it was so cool to like nothing's wrong with being called punk rock, but it's kind of nice once in a while to say, well, do we fit in any other genres? You know, is it hard to categorize us? And we played these jazz festivals. It was cool.
Totally, because that can actually put it in a different context. It can help you kind of discover new things about the music you didn't even know it sometimes. Well, like, I guess that's what that is.
The jazz influence really just comes from the interplay that is sort of the nature of the two basses and the way Mike and I, and now me with myself, write the songs, which is leave holes, fill holes, counterpoint, you know, things that we find in jazz. It just happens to have a lot of the things you find there. And I don't limit myself by saying, well, that sounds jazzy, or, oh, I don't want to do blues. You know what? I want to do it all. And I want it to be hard to categorize, but you know, you can call it punk rock for lack of a better term.
As a catch-all container or something. Sure. It's fine. In the way that, you know, most of my favorite bands are kind of hard to describe.
Like,
this just sounds like them.
You That's know,
like.
What makes it cool, right?
I mean, absolutely, yeah.
What does Bright Eyes fit into?
Right. You know? Sparks. What does Sparks sound like? I don't even know.
You
got
to listen.
You
just got to listen. You know, two drummers, I can't explain.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to see that, how that carries forward. And I think about, you know, all the way back to with you playing the Black Flag and you kind of coming in when things started to get even more experimental and kind of more, quote unquote, out there.
Right.
Sometimes to the chagrin of the people that just wanted to hear the songs they wanted to hear.
Yeah, play. Well, can you just play Damaged again?
Yeah, we just want to hear the one thing over and over again, please. Yeah.
Well, it's always the conundrum when you're putting together a live set. You know, what are you going to do to bring the people together and have the people so identified you into this one place? And Greg was really not for staying in one place, and I admired him. We were all on the same page with that, and we knew we were going to take a certain amount of that's what he called process of weeding out. People would decide not to like Black Flag anymore, and it was okay. Like, it's just don't go then, you know, don't come and say, tell us what we should be playing. Just don't go, and we'll play this stuff that maybe someone else wants to hear, because we want to play this stuff.
Right. And a lot of that, you know, ended up being influential in different ways, too. As bands kind of like later on, it's like, oh, actually, that's really cool.
Yeah. You know? And with some context and with some time and with a little bit of, oh, actually, you know, as I get older, it doesn't have to sound like one thing. And it's a little boring if it all sounds the same. And, you know, yeah, maybe I don't want to see the same thing over and over again, you know, after a while. Like, I can always go home and play the record, you know,
right,
if I want to hear that.
Yeah, and playing with the format too, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, like Family Man and whatnot, where it's, you have the spoken word and the music, and like that just wasn't done in punk rock, you know, it's like.
No, well, Greg, the instrumental stuff was a part of what we did in practice right from the start. I mean, the stuff that I was, if you will, you know, sort of tested on to see whether they wanted me in the band was all that is the instrumental riffs, and could I hold down the fort while they went crazy?
Yes, absolutely. Back crazy. Yeah.
And I could I hold the, you know, there was a need. You just hold down the fort and see what we're gonna do, you know. And and so that was always something that he wanted to do, and it was an understanding amongst us. Now, how you convey that to the audience or the community, how you share things. Maybe now with social media, it's a little easier to share how you're evolving or how and changing so that people can decide whether or not to go see your shows. You know, you allow out some singles or whatever, you do some stuff so that people can hear. Back then it wasn't so common, you know, the radio wasn't playing stuff. Well, college stations might be, you know, but people didn't know. We went to Europe and the last thing they had seen Henry was a skinhead and he had hair down to his shoulders. Right. And they were mad. They were furious. I had the shortest hair in the band, you know,
right,
and they were throwing full beer cans at us.
Which is, this goes to show. Yeah. I mean, and it's also just, we talked about it before, but you know, so much needless testosterone at some of these shows where it's just like, you must have been quite interesting to deal with. I mean,
well, I think that there became a confusion, which now after the fact that we called this thing hardcore, we didn't call it that back then. I don't know how that happened. We never said we're going to do hardcore or we're going to stop doing hardcore. That was never discussed, just so everybody knows.
Yeah.
But the fans, I think, did misunderstand somewhat what was punk rock, and they thought it was about the violence in the audience. And then some guys would just come; they weren't there to see the bands; they were just there to get their jollies out, banging around, and like getting a workout almost, like it was their kind of workout thing. So I think there was a confusion about it. You know, it started out kind of like pogoing and kind of bouncing off each other, very friendly, like, and it turns into this, you know, slamming thing, which is like, no, I'll go sit on the side of I wanted to see the band, and now
get knocked around.
Right. Now seeing the band is you take your life in your hand to get anywhere
swinging
near,
around. Right? Exactly. Yeah. Well, it seems like that the push towards that it kind of also turned it to make it a little more monochromatic, right? It made it a little less interesting, where it wasn't just the freaks and weirdos and, you know, art people.
Right. It became, we've got to define, we have to define it. And I think that there is natural for humans to do, right? To try to explain it and make it cohesive and make it matter. But nobody started it that way. And most of the people who were, had already been doing it a while, weren't going to change just because somebody had the idea that that's what it should be. So right. Black Flag goes on and does what they're going to do. And other bands come out of the punk rock scene. I mean, Nirvana and all these bands and Chili Peppers, all of them talk about the LA scene and the peep bands that they listened to that became, you know, this stuff, grunge or whatever, right? It moves on. And that's great. That's how it should be, right? It should just be an ever going continuum. And you can you can always play those old records, but the river is headed that way. You know?
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not meant to be just stuck into a museum. It's supposed to be like something that it does evolve and change. Think of like Wire, right? Like, yeah, when Pink Flag, right, came out, where it's be like, what is this? Like,
right,
this is crazy. Like, right, this, yeah, is this punk rock? I don't even know. Let's call it post-punk, you know, right. Which is like, okay, well,
and,
sure.
And yeah, I mean, journalists have to call it something. Like, we get, yeah, it. Like, yeah, I do get why. And you're trying to explain to someone what this is. You know, you do. You start sticking labels on it. I thought the hardcore thing was just bizarro because Black Flag, as we just talked about, was so anti-sticking, oh, yeah, in one place that it was like, really? Wait, I was in a hardcore band?
Yeah, I mean, I just think
who, like, knew?
Is process of weeding out hardcore? Because if when, so, maybe I'm,
yeah,
gonna,
what
I'm
record
it.
Was hardcore that I played on? Right. Slip It In?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, have you listened to that record? Well, and it's nuts, too, because... Because again, there's what's happening in the moment, it's what's happening later on. And it just feels like, yeah, things could probably be kind of daunting, I would imagine, while it was going on. But you just had to like trust the people you're playing with and trust your North Star with that, right? I mean,
well, yeah, there is a certain like that's a weird thing about a band, and you know this. You have this sort of agreement amongst yourselves that this is what we're trying to do, and if not, after a while the band breaks up or someone leaves or someone is asked to leave because you have to sustain some sort of agreed upon direction. And Greg and then she's often a benevolent dictatorship of sorts. The, yeah, songwriter is usually the one calling the shots, and Greg's calling the shots, and we all knew that. So, you know, there's no mystery there. So his put forward this idea that we were all for, let's do new stuff. Let's do instrumental. Let's do slow songs. Let's do this. And there, none of us had any question about it. The only question was, you know, could we survive a gig where people were really angry about it? And there were a couple of gigs where survival, you know, did come up, and winter, right, tours were my fault because of my school schedule, and that survival did come up as an issue at that time too.
Yeah.
But when you all agree that this is what you're doing, that we're going to tour, that we're going to put out these records, that we're going to do instrumental shows, we did instrumental shows completely, you know, we're going to do all these things, and you can decide what you think about it. That's cool. Like, it wasn't about marketing. You know, this goes back to the thing we're talking about, yeah, about marketing the music. Greg wasn't about marketing music. If he was about marketing music, SST would be the biggest label, right, ever,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, for real.
But that,
yeah,
was not his forte.
Well, yeah, and then you think about things, you know, Chuck's model more or less invented DIY touring as we know it now. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that, because it's like what we think of as like the independent like touring circuit. It did not exist. It
no,
was not
the college radios, the calling up college radios and figuring out that those were the places to find people who might know somebody who could put on a gig.
Right.
The bringing a PA system, because too many times we showed up in a town and they had a hall with a set of speakers the size of my head,
yeah,
and Henry couldn't be heard, and nothing could be heard, and we were like, screw this, we want to be heard, we want to slam you against the wall. So now we got to tour with the
everything.
PA system.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's all this, and it's crazy to think about now, because it's like, by comparison, you know, people know how to be a venue even for DIY stuff now, but that just wasn't
But promoters can be a weak spot. Yeah, right. Basically, someone could tell you in some town that they've got it together and they've got the club and they've got the, yeah, you know, they've got this, that, and the other thing, and you're relying on them. And at that time, like you said, he was paving the way. So a lot of these people had never put on a gig before.
Yeah, and a lot of times you'll get people that are very enthusiastic, but maybe the enthusiasm, yeah, outstrips the skill or
they don't know, or they don't have security, yeah, or whatever, yeah, it, yeah, is that might be, oh, the fire marshal might show up and we can't let this many people in, you know, whatever the issue of the day was. So yeah, I mean, it was a little daunting, but on the other hand, it comes back to this thing about what was my goal then and what, yeah, is it now. It's still the same thing. Like, I'm gonna keep being in my room, writing about my feelings and leaning into the discomfort. And like, and I was doing it back then, you know, and that was in my 20s, and right. I'm in my 60s now. And that also has an element of who wants to listen to someone who's in their 60s. Like, that was when we were in our 20s, we didn't think we were wanting to listen to those people's music. And I get that too.
But it also depends on, you know, which person in their 60s, which yeah. person in their 20s, right?
Of course. Yeah, and what's the community that you're trying to market sure. to, and who are you, yeah. yeah, who's your audience, who's your community? And that's why this idea of community is cool if we can make it happen. If we can make it happen through podcasts and through the internet and through Instagram or whatever, have people realize that we do have a community and we can hold each other up and show up for each other and, you know, be at the gig and all that.
You're so right, because the world can be a lot larger, but in ways that are very important, also be smaller.
Right.
In the fact that the connection is doesn't have to just be a ruinous empathy.
Right. This guy, this guy who convinced me to put the record out is in Russia. He's not here.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know? And that's, you know, yeah, that's the promise of the internet, right? That you can connect, artists can connect with their people. You know, people can connect with their people.
You can have a virtual band with a guitar player who lives in Cleveland. I did sure. it for 25 years. All of it is possible. Figure out how to use the tool to your own best use. And it doesn't have to be music.
That's right. And in a lot of cases, evolve with the times, right? Because I mean, I started this 12 years ago, which in podcast yeah. years is like 97.
Yeah,
that's
right? crazy.
And there was nothing like this. There was, what we're on? Nothing like this. It was go to Fry's Electronics, hardwire things to other things.
Yeah,
you
right,
know?
Right.
And it's easy by comparison. But, you know, that, it isn't like a walking uphill both ways in the snow kind of situation. It's I'm like, hey, it should be easier. It was real difficult. It probably kept a lot of people that had something to say away from doing it because the overhead was too much. So I think it's right. great. It's like more shows the
yeah,
better.
I love you know? The podcasting world. And I think that there's the fact that you can go find your community, whether it's true crime or whatever yeah. it is, or the political bent or whatever. Like, I want to hear this. I want to hear that. All you have to do is listen, look, and there's a bunch of podcasts about it. And you can figure out some of the people that are your people.
Yeah. And it's real special. And again, not to get too self-involved with it, but like I was doing this show for like 6 years before when the pandemic hit, the audience for this thing, like by 1,000, like yeah. went up. And yeah. I started getting messages from people. It was like, hey, you know, this is like kind of helped me through a really rough time. I was like, yeah, me too, dude. Because I couldn't play, obviously, you know,
right.
like I didn't have.
A lot of people were hurting because they couldn't get out and play.
That's
and
right.
that was how they were surviving.
And I think that's
barely
so
surviving.
Surviving. Quotation marks.
Quotation.
Right. Well, so where did it all start with you with playing bass, music, and with playing bass?
I started on
this last time. But
I started on piano when I was 6. I played classical piano from 6 to 11, and then I quit because I couldn't keep up with my brother Paul, who's 3 years older than me and also plays piano.
That's right.
And plays
he's
piano
really
on
good.
My record.
Yeah.
He's really good. I forced him into this bass 2 thing that has just, I think, made him so much better because he has had to rethink how the piano can interplay with other instruments. But he then was in a prog rock band, and their drummer quit, yeah. Their bass player quit. And I was like, I want to join this band. That's what I'll do. Instead of competing with them, I'll play with them. Of course, and so I started practicing the bass really hard. And then by the time I was ready, he wasn't into that anymore.
He
was into punk rock. No, he was into punk rock, which was cool because I didn't have to be some hot shot bass player because in punk rock, you could be lame. And he started playing drums because he thought keyboards, there were no keyboard bands. He didn't know there was one, but at the time he was playing drums. We had this band called Wax, which was my first time playing live at 16, was at the Whiskey A Go-Go with my band Wax, with him on drums, and this guitar player who my Enigma record is about on guitar, and a singer. And, you know, we started doing punk rock shows. And that was, for me, that was my first experience in taking the music out there, out of the garage, out of my room. But I didn't start writing stuff till much later. But so that's how the bass got going for me. And I loved the instrument right off.
Well, yeah, because there are some people that, you know, the joke is like, oh, it's the three guitarists and like the least good one gets handed the bass, right?
Right.
Like that's the joke. But then when you hear someone that really treats it as an instrument and it kind of leans into it, it's like, no, it kind of hits a little different. And that's...
Well, and you can tell when a guitar player is playing bass.
100%.
Maybe I shouldn't say so, but listen to My War and then listen to some of the other records. You know, it's it's clear that there's a guitar player playing the bass. That Dale Nixon definitely had a guitar background. And I hear that, you know, I hear that. I think that... bass players have a much more rhythmic sensibility than guitar players do. It's just that way. If you actually are trying to marry the guitars and the drums, right, and you have much more sensitivity to what the drums are doing, you're going to do something different than if you're just out there in the world like guitar players are.
Yeah, just following the root notes.
Just out there. Well, just out there, you know, but not kind of hold down the groove, not necessarily trying to interface with the drummer. That's the bass player's job. So, you know, yes, it's often given to the weakest player, which is weird because it's kind of the part player that holds together the two things. The drummer is kind of can go off on his own with the guitar player. We hear them together, and it's often the bass player who's helping, you know, guide that into a rhythm section, right, that's actually moving together however you want to play music, whatever the style.
So true. And I think of folks like yourself, like Mike Watt, Joe Lolly, another one.
There's a lot of great bass
Tom
players.
Peterson of like Cheap Trick, right? All the melodic lines that come from Cheap Trick from the bass. I mean, gosh.
What about the Beatles? You know,
Who? Yeah.
There's all sorts of bands.
The McCartney guy's getting good.
Where the bass player, Steely Dan was, you know, there's just all sorts of bands where the bass player is. Rush. Yeah, you know, you could go on and on, right? Where the bass player helps define the band's style.
Actually, my friend Donnie Blair, who played in the band Hagfish, and he plays in the Toadies now. He started a podcast called, I think it's like Why Bass, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, I think I talked to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's right.
I'm sure I talked to him.
That's right.
Yeah, Why Bass. I thought it was a great title.
You've heard of Akira?
Yeah. I've been asked many times. Why Bass? Yeah.
And I think that's so cool because it is something that, you know, again, people that engage with this show, they either tend to be a lot of musicians, but people that are deeply interested in music and thinking about the constituent parts and things along those lines. So even just like hearing you talk about in the flag days of, you know, basically everyone's going crazy and you're just like, all right, I'm holding it down.
Holding down the fort. I'll be here playing that riff that you started.
And everyone else is there, zinging all around, zinging around this
and,
way.
Hey, that was what I thought Greg wanted.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. Like I was a not hired gun, right? I was a gun.
And you talked last time, I remember, about just the epic length practices of just like, just going and going.
You know, it's a very physical band, and when you're going to play 2-hour sets, you do have to practice a lot. I never had a natural capacity. I've always had to practice a lot. I still have to practice a lot if I'm going to do it. And my songs currently, my Enigma stuff, my first album, the bass parts aren't particularly hard. They're nothing compared to Dose bass lines,
right?
But I still have to practice. It's like, because the truth is, when you play live, ideally, and you know this, you're kind of working off muscle memory because you want to be present in the time of the gig and not be thinking, okay, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and this note, and then this note. You don't want to have to be quite so engaged in what your fingers are doing. You want the fingers to kind of be on autopilot, and that can happen if you practice a lot.
And you can go deeper performance-wise when you're thinking about it.
Or if you're singing and playing, which I'm trying to do, you can actually think about your singing and trying to get it in key because the bass kind of does its own thing. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I've definitely internally castigated myself. They're like, oh, why are there so many words in this song? Jeez, I can't remember.
And then, I bought myself a headset microphone so I don't have to cuddle up to the mic with my face anymore.
Okay, interesting.
I want to be able to at least, like, I'm not just dance around like I used to, but I can at least then move.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And that's it's all about whatever works for you too.
Yeah, right? because well, it's like they're tools. You got to utilize the tools. These tools are getting really, really good. So anyway, I've got a mic that sounds really good, and it'll help me play bass and sing at the same time without, you know, I get a crick in my neck having to get my face onto the mic. Then, right? It's painful.
Can I tell you every picture if you're doing this? I call it bullfrogging because it really gets the chins going.
Yeah. I mean, forget
That's my personal cross to bear anyway.
I'm trying something new. I wanted to try something new. So I've been messing around with that. I think that utilizing technology is what we're talking about, like continuing to be open to new technology that can help us do our craft. And playing live is its own challenge with its own set of, the in-ear monitors, you know, saved my life now, you know, because monitors.
Could you imagine that existing back in the day? I mean, it's like.
Because the amount of feedback you heard, because the PA guy just doesn't understand the concept. And because, all, if you have it in your ear, guess what? You don't have any feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
But not all clubs can support this stuff. But it is nice to be able to apply technology to the craft when you're playing live. It's the same thing also when recording. I have a good microphone. I don't have anything fancy here. I have my laptop. I record on Pro Tools because I work in Pro Tools. So
That's right.
It's doing two things.
And you were good enough to, of course, come on my other show, the movie show, Moving Extravaganza, talk about Project Hail Mary, which you worked on.
I did. I work in the movie business to earn a living because my solo project is not paying the bills.
It turns out you're not paying the rent on that?
Turns out that even though I'm supposed to be this, you know, rock star.
Yeah, it's like that old MTV, that I think it's MTV or something, where Buzz Osborne tries to buy a house on IndieCred, and they that's not legal tender, sir.
No. I mean, Mike and I mean, Doze, nobody came to Doze gigs. We would cave. It was like, we're both like kind of well-known. Hey, why don't nobody even wants to check it out, you know?
It's
a jaded world we live in. But anyway, so I do work in the movie business, and it's a very interesting business to work in. I like it because it's project to project, and that is useful for a couple of things. It allows me some time in between sometimes to make music, and also the project ends and you work with new people.
Right. So if you don't like the
well,
situation,
you always know that this particular project and its challenges will end and the next challenges will come. You always know it will shift. And I learned that for me, that was a good thing, that I could get into this infinity thinking it's just always going to be like this, you know, and I don't like that.
Yeah, and that's something where it seems like there's like, you know, it's a different type of skill. It's a craft, but it isn't, you know, because the difference between art and craft can, like, those lines can be very blurred sometimes, right?
But, well, I mean, my work is very technical, I would say, whereas my music is more artistic. It's more technical. It's almost like left brain.
Yeah, it's like
left
versus
brain,
head.
Right?
Yeah.
It's almost more like that. Like, I'm problem solving in dialogue editing, and I'm nurturing my sick brain,
right?
You know, my sick heart in my music. Like, this upset me, I need to write a song about it. This happened, I need to write a song about it. Oh, I'm really into this, I need to write a song about it.
Did the so when you're writing, speaking of writing songs, like, is it something where you are like, okay, I'm gonna write a record, let's, like, what ideas do I have? Or is it kind of something that goes as you go along, you're like, okay, I record this, record that, and oh, look at this. This looks like this all fits together in a certain
way. Yeah, I mean, I'm always making songs. So it is this sort of continuum where there's all these songs, and then the idea came to put this record together and to honor my friend. And then it was a matter of what songs sort of fit together, fit with Enigma, which was the song that I wanted to use as the title. And then I could build the record around it with a set of songs. And then there would be songs that wouldn't make it out of this infinity number of songs that happen because for whatever reason, either sonically or content wise, it didn't seem to fit to me. You know, that I feel like this one fits together even more than the last one. I feel like the recording process was more consistent because we recorded it all live. The drummer and I were in the same room, which we were not at all on the first record. We were very much a virtual band. So it's got a little bit more of a band feel. And I think, and they were much more involved too. They writing their parts and doing a lot more in terms of affecting what the end result would be.
Right. And you get a different feel when you have people in the same room versus just like listening to parts isolated.
Well, when you collaborate, in other words, when you work together to make your parts and not just like, here's what you're going to do and here's what you're going to do. But but let's work on it. Let's sit down and hang out and like struggle against it and come up with some cool stuff. Then you also feel like the finished product represents the group more than the individual.
Which is going to bring out different parts of the music too.
Right.
Because it's something where, you know, it's like you were saying about Dale Nixon playing on My War versus, you know, real bass player.
Right.
I love My War. My War is great.
It's a like, great record. The songs are great.
Songs are amazing. But you're not listening to it for the bass parts, you know? That's the way it is. It was there to serve a purpose. It was doing the thing, right?
It filled in that sonic place.
Right. Yeah. And so, but then, you know, when I listen to stuff that has like more active bass playing, it's so interesting because it's like, oh yeah, that can be used in a way that's not just holding the root and holding the root note or whatever. Like,
well,
you're doing interesting
things. Slip It In is a very simple bass line, right? But it has this fucking groove thing going on. It's like, it's grooving you to shit, right? And that wouldn't be possible without a sensibility, you know? And I think that, I mean, all of our sensibilities evolve, and Greg's has too. And I'm sure that newer stuff he's doing is really cool. Like, I don't know. I bet those kids have a lot of rage.
I mean, it's kind of a trip that it's like, well, I guess that would have been like the same age, you know?
But that,
like
yeah, started, that makes right? that makes a certain amount of sense. Like, let's get some angry, full of rage, you know, kids.
I'm angry about my mortgage payment. No, I'm angry at totally different things. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's cool. Yeah, like, go for it.
So you haven't seen any of this?
I have not, but I am. I bet that it's better than a lot of versions. And I suspect that there's an energy there that is being captured by the young folks who have a passion for the music. Right. So that they're tied into what Greg is doing, but also have their own traumas and passions to bring to bear.
Right. And it's something where, this record, I think there's a groove to this record, right? There's definitely like it's not, again, it's not just the one thing, but like there's, you know, it's got a little swagger. It's got a little sway. Yeah. And there's not afraid of using space in the compositions as well.
Space is good. Space actually can really make you feel things like that discomfort that you have in space or that seriousness. That, you know, I try to make you connect to a feeling, right? So I have to hit you in a place where maybe you're not thinking about it when you first listen, but I have to find that way into your head. And the way I do that is to really try to be clear about a root feeling that we've all had. Even if the situation was totally different between me and you, we've had this root feeling. We've had this experience. We've been hurt in this way. We've been angry in this way. And so I can get you there. And space is very effective as a way of getting to you if you listen. If you don't fill your head with every single, you know, moment and you let some space happen, it actually tends to make you feel more.
Absolutely. And I think that the usage of space a lot of times, I don't want to strictly ascribe it to age, but I think it's more of a younger player thing to just, oh, I want to fill every available second with whatever. Right. Singers, especially. Mm-hmm. Singers that it's like, oh, my God, just give it a rest, Robert Plant. Not to call anyone out specifically, but where it's like, it's okay to not be doing something. That's actually kind of good. It can kind of draw, it can draw things down. And no, but it's a very... I feel like your record, the new run, it's got a very, it's got a quiet authority to it. Like, it's something where it's like, it's very much, you know exactly what it is. You're leaning into it. You're taking things that were cool in the first one and kind of like digging a little deeper in there, but also trying some different stuff. And, that's the, well, gosh, isn't that what an artist should be doing?
Well, hopefully, you know, I mean, I there is this question of whether people, you know, if you get other people involved, do they want to do that? But luckily, if you find a set of players who want to move forward with you, like I've been lucky enough to find some people who would collaborate with me and wanted to lean into this with me, we get to create this new thing, and there may never be another one, you know. Some new person's gonna have to talk me into it down the road.
Well, it's so great to have your brother kind of, well, not that he's in your back pocket, but I was gonna say your brother available, because I mean, I'm a big fan of Paul. Like, I mean, I think that Turning of the Bright World record, and I was like, that should have been a record that more people paid attention to. I mean, other records too, but that one especially, I'm like, how is this not like a record that everyone's talking about? Only me. It was just me.
I know what you mean. I think Paul
he feels the same way, by the way.
I think that he's very good at expressing himself. He tends to be a little bit more of a fill in the gaps person than I am. It's been a real interesting collaboration to turn him into someone who leaves space and works with space. But because of that, because it's new for him, he's exploring, he's pressing on new buttons in his repertoire. But I love Paul's music, and I there are a million songs he has that make me weep openly. Like, he has an ability to really, really say stuff, and I'm surprised he's not a rock star. He certainly wanted to be one growing up.
Well, and it's like, sometimes it's just bad timing. Sometimes, like, you know, there's other factors involved, but it's like,
it's that marketing thing. Artists aren't marketers. You know, it's like you need to have someone come along who's going to help bridge the gap between artists and everybody else, because we'll just sit in our room, you know, playing and, you know, looking at our guitar like do. And that's all, you know. Paul now produces a lot of bands, so he gets to be involved in a lot of different projects. And I think that that's great for him, because it does give him an outlet for his incredible creativity without, banging his head against trying to make his own music be more famous. But he loves to write stuff, and he says he loves to do this stuff because we enjoy the collaboration that we do.
It works really well, and it feels natural in a way that I hate to ascribe to this, but maybe you only get with siblings, right? Like, having just been on tour with the McDonald Boys.
I would argue that the fact that there was a second bass line that Paul is basing his part off of is the real way that it ties him to me. Sure. If I wrote no second bass line and I handed him my singing and my one bass line and had him write a piano part, it would be completely different.
Yeah.
But what I do is I do a second bass line that I have no attachment to. He doesn't have to use it, but it starts him off on this journey.
It's just starting the boulder down the hill. Yeah.
And it connects him to me in this back and forth kind of way. It gives him a way of doing it and a suggestion that seems to really create something new. I know it would be very different if, even with the same players, if I didn't do it, but it's been a way to, I think, bring him closer to the way my sensibility works.
And it's also something where, instead of being like, here's a completely blank slate, do something cool, there's like a guidepost of like, all right, so we're making a picture of a dog, it looks like this, you know, and then they getting, you know, sometimes for me, that's better. That it's better to
What's
have a
funny
bit of a
is
box,
sometimes right? Like I'll have some kind of what I think is kind of silly melody in the second bass line. I'm sure he's going to do something better, and he's like, "No, that's really cool." And I'll be like, "Oh,
yeah,
all right."
Stop digging, you hit gold, right?
You get that other perspective when you collaborate with people, which is one of the really fun parts of it. You know, I will say that writing is a great joy, but collaboration is a great joy too. Trying to market is not a great joy. and it's what makes it hard for artists to get their music out there. I always say the best players are probably sitting in the garage or in their room somewhere.
You'll never hear them. I actually just last night watched the documentary, the band Pentagram, that Bobby Liebling guy. Are you familiar with that band?
I've heard some stuff. Yeah.
And I gotta say, for years I didn't watch it. I'm like, I'm not much of a metal guy. I don't know.
Then
it's like, you know, Black Sabbath kind of, you know, Sir Lord Baltimore or Groundhogs. I'm like, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And fascinating movie. Bobby Liebling, interesting character. Bobby Liebling, come on, Protonic Reversal. But it was one of those things that it's outlining a lot of the things you're talking about, where it's like, yeah, this guy just could not get it together at all.
Yeah,
and so it's just genius, like amazing songs, and just nobody knew anything about them, unless of the people that did know, that were like, oh my God, so great. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. And that's one of the reasons why I do this show.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. It's really great that you're doing it. Like we were saying earlier, there is the internet. There is a way now to build some community. There are festivals. You know, I've been reading some people out there who feel like there's no shows to play. Like, you know, LA is brutal that way. You know, there's a million shows, but it's really hard for a band to just go, hey, call up a club and go, hey, you know, can we play there? You know, it's such an empty experience to try to like force your way in. And I hope that the community that, like you said, you brought up a club there, the Lodge Room. I've heard good things about that. It helps to have a venue that is actually open to community, you know?
And things that are not just profit making utilities, right? Where it's like, oh, we actually like art here. Okay, well, wild idea, but And I need to close it out. Kira, you've been it's so lovely to have you back. We won't make it like a 4-year break or whatever the hell it's been.
No, that was a long time.
I mean, I do this every week, so when I'm not on tour. So
when you're not on tour, which you're going to be, and
which
you're gonna
I'm
going to
be on tour.
To the West Coast, and I'm going to get to see you in September.
Let's do it. Last thing, only canned question I ever ask, Kira. You can choose an interpreter however you like, but why do you do what you do?
I don't have any choice at all. The feelings come and I must express them.
Love it. Kira Rossler, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Until next time.
Okay, bye.
There she goes. Kira Rossler, let's hear something off of the record Enigma. I'm going to play the first single. This is How Could You?
How could you? Why would you? Even though I know I'm wrong. How could you? Why would you? Even though I know I'm wrong.
Well, there you go, there you go, there you go. That was Akira Rossler off of the record Enigma. How Could You? It's the name of that song. And you can get that orgmusiclabel.bandcamp.com. Orgmusic.com is the greater website for that. It's a, there's all kinds of like Bad Brains, Descendants stuff on there. Yeah, I've been looking at it. There's a lot of stuff. Go support Kira. She's awesome. We love Kira. We are pro Kira podcast and we vote. Kira Rossler, everyone. Living legend. Come on. Hey, so name of the show is Code Neutron Protonic Reversal. Thanks very much for listening to it. This show airs Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. Streaming live on YouTube and Twitch. Podcast later everywhere for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. But of course, if you like the show and you want to support it and get episodes sooner, patreon.com/protonicreversal. $1 a month gladly achieves that goal. Helps keep the lights on this joint, too. So deeply appreciated. And if you like the show as well, or even a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice. Leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back those almighty algorithm overlords, which we deeply appreciate. I will be on tour the next 2 weeks, so you will not have any new Protonics, but we'll be right back at it in July. So some really cool stuff coming up. Stay tuned, as always. If you stay tuned, no problem. Again, neutronfriends.bandcamp.com. East Coast coming up, West Coast in August and September. 50,000 watts of power. Let's see, anything else? No, I don't think so. Org Music, get the Kira record, the second one, Enigma. We gotta support our legend. We gotta support our folks still doing it. Anything else? I don't think so. Just stay safe out there, and as always, I'll check you later.
Out on Route 128.
Check you later.
Dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
To my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you-
If there's no one there to receive. It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio.